This is Penelope Waiting, a Stargate Atlantis fanfic written by Domenica Marzion and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated G and is Gen, with the pairing Atlantis, John Shepard, and additional tags for Sentient Atlantis. We know who her sweetheart is. Outside POV, with references to Season 2, Episode 10, The Lost Boys. Season 2, Episode 11, The Hive. Atlantis knows. It is only a hypothesis at first, a convenient, if wholly unscientific, explanation for why the lights seem dimmer, the response times feel slower, and systems that can usually be coaxed into accepting the forced interface between Earth technology and ancient are suddenly reluctant, if not downright dismissive. It is only a hypothesis because nobody can chart a drop in lumens or reaction times, and Raddick has run every test he could think of to figure out why Atlantis capriciously won't recognize the laptops in the control room or the labs without at least two reboots and a lot of begging and pleading to inanimate objects that maybe aren't. It is nothing Rodney would have been able to fix, he explains to Dr. Weir when she doesn't come out and ask, but looks speculatively at him. Because for all of Dr. McKay's many areas of genius, getting foreign technologies to work with each other isn't one of them. It was something he had always let Raddick handle, the delegation of responsibility, a tacit agreement, the only kind from McKay, of Raddick's superior knowledge and experience. What he doesn't say is that the problem with Atlantis is that Atlantis knows, and Rodney would have been useless because he would never have admitted the problem existed. Raddick knows that Rodney would have scoffed at his hypothesis, because Rodney believes without reservation that man rules machine naturally and completely and by right. Raddick does not tell Elizabeth, or anyone else, that if Rodney were here, he would have turned the entire science division to the task of breaking Atlantis to the bit, because he refuses to accept that Atlantis has a will to break. Even after the gene therapy took, and he too could feel Atlantis's touch, Rodney did not alter his opinion that Atlantis was little better than a slave, albeit a highly advanced one. Raddick thought it very small-minded for someone with such a big brain, and he told Rodney so. A long afternoon of uncomfortable silence resulted, but Raddick was and is still convinced, even as Atlantis's moods remain opaque to him. It is only a hypothesis, because he cannot prove it by any means acceptable to any official organization back on Earth. But that does not change what Raddick believes to be true. Atlantis knows that the one she holds most dear has been taken from her. It stops being a hypothesis after Tolvanen and Selikova returned from the South Pier wet and frustrated, and complaining that Atlantis should have been told about Shepard right away so that she could mourn and then get back to work and stop taking her grief out on the rest of them. Once it had been spoken aloud, the hypothesis becomes thesis, becomes fact. Simply because, it seems, everyone has been believing it all along in the privacy of their minds. There is still no quantifiable proof, but articles of faith don't always require tangible evidence. Atlantis knows and is grieving, and Raddick finds himself murmuring softly to her as he works on her infrastructure, even though he is not sure she can hear him. Most of the time, Atlantis behaves for him as she always has, which is as if she is suffering his touch because she knows that, as distasteful as it is, the reward will be worth it. But sometimes she is like a fretful child, and there is nothing Raddick can do to soothe her into compliance. Nevertheless, he tries his usual array of parlor tricks and distractions he has developed, because even with the ZPM in place, Atlantis is fickle about many things, and stubborn about many more. She does not like being overruled or second-guessed, and if she has kept a door closed, even after Shepard has been retrieved to cajole her into opening it, she will prove restive and difficult once they have manually overridden the lock, and Shepard's most earnest mental caresses are usually only good enough to get the lights on. Without Shepard, and usually now without the too busy Stackhouse or Beckett or Kusanagi or any of the other naturally ATA-endowed residents, to romance her into acquiescence, if not obedience, Atlantis is frequently sullen and occasionally spiteful. It is just as well that the expedition is wholly focused on the search for Shepard's team, because precious little productive investigative work is getting done. Radek is not alone in thinking that this is intentional on Atlantis' part, forcing them to look for her prodigal master. Otkarov says they should talk to Dr. Heitmeyer about Atlantis. And the very idea of getting the expedition shrink to try therapy on the city has stopped sounding quite so much like a joke as the weeks go by. Those with the gene talk of Atlantis being both jealous and elusive, hard to reach out to, and harder still to disentangle from. Those who have had the gene artificially induced by therapy say she runs hot and cold, either ignoring them completely or letting them do more than they could before. It would be entertaining in a surreal way if it were not making a hash of daily life. There are constant summonings of the technology team on call, because devices that have been working fine since someone with the gene initialized them almost 2 years ago are suddenly not working at all for anyone without the gene. Dr. Weir has gotten both locked in and locked out of her office, and so far, the armory door has been prized open 5 times to free Marines trapped inside. The medical team is having the least awkward time of it because Beckett is usually right there to fix things. But there is nobody in the chemistry unit with the gene, and they are afraid to work with hazardous materials lest their protective measures suddenly conk out on them. The Stargate, of course, is working fine. And those in the command and control unit say that they can almost hear a hum of anticipation at each incoming wormhole, as if Atlantis is hoping that this time it will be Shepard stepping through. It never is. And Radek knows that Atlantis sulks each time because he has timed outages to off-world activation of the Stargate. Coughlin and Vernier, the two who split what were once Peter Groden's duties, have taken to trying to reason aloud with Atlantis. They tell her in English, French, and ancient that each team is bringing back information that may help them find the missing team. Unsurprisingly, it does not seem to work. Radek, who has no evidence except a gut instinct and a bohemian soul, tells Dr. Weir one day that he does not think that Atlantis would go so far as to let herself get destroyed. She is being perverse and coy, true, but not suicidal. Nothing she has done to herself is permanent. If the Wraith were to come, she would fight more ferociously than she ever has, because if she is going so far to spurn suitors born of the ancients, then she would refuse the Wraith with that much more determination. She does not want a new love and master. She wants Shepard to return. Until then, Atlantis waits, like Penelope at her loom, picking apart her beautiful handiwork when nobody is looking, and keeping faith when those around her would falter. The end. Reader's notes. Oh, my heart, it hurts. The outside POV of The Atlantis John Shepherd connection from Radek of I am a man of scientific disposition, but I will attribute some emotional connection between, like, the way that, like, oh, it's just so good, it's just so good. And you know that everybody in Stargate Command has, like, you know those posts about, like, this is our IT shrine, and if the computer server rack doesn't have the right kind of potato chips, then the server crashes, like, that kind of thing? Like, you know that the gate control people absolutely have little fidgets and widgets and shrine-type, you know, superstitions about gate travel. And you know that everybody who got sent through to Atlantis has definitely developed some sort of, we have definitely personified tech that doesn't necessarily have it. Only then, if it turns out that Atlantis actually is sentient, like, it's not you've personified the city. The city was a person in and of herself beforehand. And then, of course, she's in love with John Shepherd. He walked up the stairs and she lit up for him. And watching her mourn is the most heartbreaking, hurtful thing. And then he's gonna come home and he's gonna be so fucking doped up on Wraith enzyme, poor John. And then, of course, when anyone tells John or Rodney, you know, when they get back that, like, Atlantis was doing these things, Rodney's not gonna believe any of it. So Veronica Mars Leon has this amazingly beautiful prose style and an incredible blank of permission to Pontvic, which I super enjoy. And I just, you can feel it. You can chew on the walls about how good this fic is. Thank you so much for having blanket permission to Podfic. Thank you, the listener. I hope you enjoyed it, and have a nice day.